There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Glad to have you here. Live local talk over the hour and your phone calls at 343-0106. 343-0106. Another great event tonight at Cottage Hill Package, right there at the back of Cottage Hill Package in the great lounge. We have the great leather furniture, the big wood bar, and always fun events for fans. Craft beer sometimes. Sometimes it's wine and tonight, it's for cigars, as Oscar Valadares has their event tonight from 6 to 8. Actually, it starts at 6. This is a free event at Cottage Hill Package in the lounge in the back. Oscar Valadares will be in-house also. You can enjoy any of his fine cigars, including his new release for 2018, the Alter Q. Take advantage of limited-time promotional deals, free swag and giveaways, great food, especially if the Manis family cooks. Forget about it. Great stuff. Tasty food, great drinks. Event is free dinner, so don't miss out. That is tonight. Quarter Cottage Hill and Hillcrest. Cottage Hill Package, cottagehillpackage.com. Check them out on Facebook as well. But tonight, Oscar Valadares, a cigar event starting at 6. So for you cigar fans, you aficionados, this is your time tonight. We'll see you out there. All right, and a couple things we're going to run through this hour. I want to we'll talk some more lottery. We'll also talk about the about this bicyclist in Baldwin County, because this kind of goes into something that was texted to us this morning. So I want to get into that. And also, I want to talk about a story we've mentioned in headlines, but a little more on this, because G is checking in from Baldwin County. He wants to talk about the story this week of the arrested officer, the charges against a one-time sergeant in the Mobile Police Department, former MPD sergeant, that has been charged with forgery. And Michael Barber charged, I think, 45 different counts here, and we'll go through those. So I want to get to the call here. G, thanks for joining us. So what's your thought on this?
Well, first thing I'd like to say is this is in what I have to say is in no means a criticism or a negative thing that I'm trying to say about anyone that serves in our law enforcement. In this particular case, you know, you get a blurb in a news headline in a local news story, but you only get a small amount of information on that. And what I'd like to add to this, there are a lot of ripples in the pond that I see that I believe would be coming with this. I don't believe that this guy just took it upon himself at the very last of his career to do this fraudulent thing. I believe this has been something he's been doing for a long time. That these are counts that on his way out of, on retirement or such. I just don't believe that he started doing this. You know, as you and I spoke earlier off air, you know, if you study psychology and you see how if a person were to shoplift, when they first do something like that, they're nervous about it, they're watching every angle, they've got that going on, and then what ends up getting them caught over time is them becoming comfortable with what they're doing and leaving places where they can be noticed or just being negligent with it. And I just don't believe that this is a one-time situation with this person, especially for a negligible amount of money that they're mentioning on the news about this. The other side of it is the idea that anyone that he may have been involved with arresting or prosecuting over the years, that person, if they're sitting in a jail cell right now, I guarantee you they're calling their attorney saying this person was arrested for malfeasance, and I bet you that it played a factor into my arrest.
So the fruit of the poison tree, even though, because you're saying somebody could actually be, because there's a pretty good chance over 26 years of his career, there were legitimate tickets and legitimate arrests, right? Is that fair to say?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. I agree 100%. I just think that the person didn't just do this in his last year of employment. I think that at some point or another, it's just like how people will claim overtime at companies when they didn't really earn that. They'll have a buddy clock them in earlier, clock them in later. They just get comfortable in the system. And when you're doing something that is that unethical, but yet you're in a position to where ethics is everything. It's the reason why you get out of bed every day, is what the public expects out of you. For these types of stories to come to light, that is how people get a negative perception of law enforcement, and that's how people will make generalizations about those types of things. And I think this person is an extreme discredit to the Mobile Police Department. He would be a discredit to any police department.
This is interesting, and I see what you're getting at, what you brought up, and we'll see if the investigation goes further, right? If the DA's office digs beyond the 45 counts of forgery they have against him, well, and starts digging back in the history.
In your opinion, how much of that would be a matter of public record? Because what I would be curious of is when they look into this, they investigate what a person agrees to be guilty of, may or may not be the full extent of what they've actually done.
Sometimes the inverse, though. Sometimes they bring a whole bunch of charges, right, against somebody, and knowing that maybe they can't make them all stick, but it may get them to agree to plea, you know, to a lesser amount, but they know that that's going to be enough to get them. So
when they have 45 or 47 counts against this man, even though they mention in the blurb on the news that these didn't actually go on these people's records,
right?
Well, that's good for those people, but in the bigger picture, that's a major insult for the entire public at large, is that a private citizen can have something done like that against them for an individual's benefit. And what I'm curious about is, what if it had affected these people's driving records?
Sure.
What if it had affected their insurance rate, or they had an outstanding warrant for their arrest over a ticket that they were never legitimately issued to begin with?
Right, and I wonder if he would have protected against that. I mean, I'm just guessing, because that would have brought down the house of cards sooner, right? I mean, you would have tried to hedge against that, because that would have brought it all down. You'd want to...
I don't want to take up a lot more of your time.
I appreciate the call.
Another example is just... when they had the stolen narcotics out of the Escambia County Sheriff's Department in Pensacola, in that area, the jail not long after that exploded under some mysterious circumstances. But what ended up happening was, because of the employee through the Sheriff's Department that stole these narcotics, they were not able to press charges on a great number of the people who had been investigated and arrested for illegal narcotics. And what I'm saying is that is a likely possibility with a situation like this, when you've got an officer that does get convicted of something where the ripples in the pond, they stretch out pretty widely.
Gee, I appreciate the call, and I wonder about that, if how much further it will go, and will there be other things investigated? If y'all haven't followed this, I tell you what, we'll run the news break here, get an update from WKRG, and come back with this, because we have reported it in headlines, but I think it is worth digging into here and get some more details, kind of how at least the DA has laid out how this racket was working for this former police officer. And then this text here, where is it? Okay, there we go. Casino in Atmore is not on tribal land or original for tribal land. I got that. And then another texter said that the Porch Creek cannot build a casino unless the land is in trust. Okay. They can't build a casino unless the land is in trust, is trust land, which means it is held in trust for the Porch Creek Indians by the U.S. government. That means if they bought the land... I guess, and I don't know the situation at other, but if they bought the land, Porch Creek bought the land, that it can't be in trust. Therefore, it wouldn't be able to be a casino. So, may answer one of the earlier questions. You know what? We'll dig into that and see what the law is. But the way I hear people say, well, golf questions make it a casino. I say, you can't just make it. There's not a magic casino wand to do that. There's a reason tribal lands or where they put casinos. Obviously, it's federal government in the mix. Imagine that. Coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 120 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Online, fmtalk1065.com. Also, remember, you can stream us on your smartphone, the app TuneIn Radio. TuneIn Radio, like the two words, but pushed together, TuneIn Radio. Free on Google Play or iTunes, and it really is a cool app. Number one, lets you stream the station. You get a call, text, something like that comes in. It'll pause the audio. Then when you're finished with that, you can pick it right back up. And also now on TuneIn Radio, you can get our podcast, which we do so many hours of live local radio here a week, which is like volumes more than the competition out there, but that's what we do. So, I mean, that's kind of radio we do. We put those up for podcast. So if you hear something on a show, you want to share it with a friend, you want to go back and listen to something again, we got them. We got you covered here. So podcast, of course, by going to our website, fmtalk1065.com, click the link for podcast there, or if you're on TuneIn Radio, like I said, you can get them there. You can get them on Spotify, get them on Stitcher, and get them on iTunes. So there's a bunch of different ways for podcast and for streaming the show on your phone, TuneIn Radio. And big thank you. The numbers are fantastic. People that are podcasting this station, people that are streaming this station, we sure appreciate it as well. And yeah, the good old-fashioned way I like to listen on the radio. That's great as well. All right, want to get delve back into this story that G had brought up a second ago that you've heard some about this week. About a 26-year veteran of the Mobile Police Department that was arrested for forgery and theft. And this is, it took some digging through, and I think I understand how this was working, but there may be a nuance here that I still don't get. So we're, like you mentioned earlier, 45 counts of forgery, one count of theft of property. The indictment that came out said former Sergeant Mike Barber was writing fake tickets to people. Okay, District Attorney Ashley Rich says anyone that Barber wrote a ticket to will receive no punishment. Most of the tickets were issued for improper headlights, tags, and speeding. 45 fake tickets, hence 45 forgery counts, with 15 victims. And it lists down here, a story from MyNBC 15 had it listed out from just last year. In November and then through March of this year, the tickets for seatbelt, no insurance, red light running, these different things. I believe that the people weren't even there. The way I understand this, and it brings up a whole other question, that the people weren't there. In other words, the names were, and law enforcement folks, I know, listen to the show. If I've got this wrong, please steer me in the right direction. But the way what I'm picking up from the news stories and hearing the district attorney is that, like, names were found and tickets were made for the names. Like, there was not a stop made. That they just created this to make up for the overtime, to say that they were, you know, that, oh, look at all these tickets I wrote. That's why I had the overtime. I was out there writing those tickets. But that's my takeaway from this. If I've got that wrong, once again, 343-0106, 343-0106, and that part scares me more than anything. But number one, and it's got to be the way, because if you were pulled over, if I was pulled over for running a red light that was not red, I wouldn't get a court. You know, I'm going to go to court and plead my case. If I knew I was not speeding and I was told I was speeding, and I'm going to go to court. So that would have blown the whole thing up. So I think what's scary about this is, if it's the way I think it is, then names were being found through database of people in the city, database out there of people who were, could possibly fit the bill of having been in the city, and then just writing that down and say, okay, what's this part? It's this person. And then they don't file any more on the ticket. It's a strange thing, and it seems like, I get what the caller said, you know, that much goings on for, I think they said it was $2,700 worth of overtime. Okay. All right. This helps me. Okay. They were warning tickets. Very good. Thank you. So a friend of mine in law enforcement told me that, so that's how they were warnings. So if there were warning tickets, then you wouldn't have a... Obviously, I may have gotten a warning ticket in my life. And if you get a warning ticket, you don't have to go to court. You know, you don't have to pay it. But if you screw up again, then you get... So that's... Okay, there were warning tickets that were written to qualify for what was going on. So there you go. We understand now how it didn't... Because if you ended up going to court... I mean, if you got a ticket for something you had to pay and you said, man, that's not speeding. I didn't run the red light. You'd go to court. But there you go. There were warning tickets. Thank you. See, just one great text there from people in the know helps me understand. All right, we can grab a couple calls on this. Damon is in Mobile. Hey, Damon.
Hey, yes. I just wanted to point out, I watched the report on the news, and they had a lady on there that was one of the people that was involved in this, and the detective contacted her, and she said that the address that they had for her was an old address, so... It could have been an old warning ticket. Maybe they were his old tickets. Maybe he kept the old, you know, the officer copies, you know, in a drawer or something. I don't know. But the lady said that she couldn't have been served because she didn't live at that address anymore. So
but, I mean, if you – because I know that the district attorney said, well, nobody's going to have to, you know, deal or pay for the tickets or be – okay, well, let's hope so. Let's hope so, because people didn't do the thing. But the other part of it is, I want to understand kind of how this works, because if it had been a ticket that went through the system, right, if it's Damon, if it's you or if it's me, and then we don't know we got the ticket, right, and it went through the system, and all of a sudden there's a warrant out for our arrest, what the heck? I wasn't even there, you know, or whatever it was. I didn't even get a ticket.
Except that I believe with the police, if the policeman doesn't show up to the court, they throw it out, I believe. So maybe he just didn't show up, or maybe and you said there were warning tickets. So I don't know if the officer, you know, just doesn't show up and he made the overtime. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, warning tickets. I'll admit, yes, I have. I've gotten one in the past, and I didn't have to show up, but I got a ticket that said, "Hey, you know, you could have gotten a ticket for this, and if you do this again, you're now on notice. We got a copy of this, and you're going to get popped for it."
That's true. So I guess he had to justify the overtime to a superior, I guess, by having some way to, you know, prove what he was doing. So
doesn't it seem like this is a whole? I mean, it sounds like the conversation I've had with my children before. Doesn't it seem like a whole lot of work instead of just doing the thing you're supposed to do?
It does, especially with police officers who can make extra money.
Yes.
Off duty, you know, using a police car, a police uniform, and a police gun, and make money on the side doing security work. So I don't know why somebody would go through all those links.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, we don't want them, no matter what, doing it. I mean, they're officers of the law, and they should be held to higher account. But still, I mean, it seems like a whole lot of work for not a lot of return.
It does. When they could, you know, pick up a security job on the side and make a little extra money without any problem.
Scratching my head, man. Damon, thanks for the call. Appreciate that. We'll dig into this some more, but I'm now getting a little better idea, although with having a little better understanding, starting to get confused on another level how this whole thing works. Hey, anything on the International Space Station, anything new? Y'all see that earlier today? Like, I guess because there's so much in the national news cycle focused on the funeral for late Senator John McCain and all that, there hadn't been a whole bunch of discussion, but... So it was a story, let's see, Air Live, a bunch of people have it, but this is from airlive.net, says, pressure sensors detected a depressurization in the International Space Station, possibly caused by a micrometeorite impact. Said a crew had to search for a leak, which was eventually traced to the Russian space capsule docked to the station. The leak was found in the Soyuz craft, which was docked to the International Space Station. I'm sure parked perfectly in the spot. Right. Reportedly, Russian space chief Dmitry Rogozin said, the official said air was, here we go. Now, I know, micrometeorite, okay, it's small and it's Russian. Listen to this. Official said air was being sucked out through a 1.5 millimeter fracture, which might have been caused by a micrometeorite impact. Said crew safety is not in danger, spaceship will be kept, and the repair kit will be used, which I think is probably, y'all with me? It's probably Flex Seal. They're probably using Flex Seal. Rogozin said the malfunction will require a sealant to be applied from the inside of the ship. Once again, it's got to be Flex Seal. So no emergency spacewalk will be required. How do you feel about that when you're in space dealing with the pressure, or better yet, the lack of pressure on one side of a wall versus inside of a wall of the space station. If they just, I patched it, I got some JB Weld, we're good. We're good, yeah, don't worry about it, sleep tight. They said after walking the regular time, the six crew members started the search procedure and finally localized the leak to the Russian side of the station. It always is. ISS regularly requires small repairs of various systems, although a hull breach, even a small one, is a rare occurrence. Let's hope so. Crew members usually have to deal with leaks from internal tubing, electrical problems, or failures of life-supporting devices, including the space toilet. I like the fact you can just put space in front of anything. It's a space toilet, which experienced a series of malfunctions back in 2008, which is a whole other subject matter. But yeah, they're fine now. They put some Flex Seal on it. They got it. But, I mean, if you're in the International Space Station, they go, yeah, I don't know. Seems like air's leaking out into space. I think you float on over there to get to work on that, don't you? That's priority kind of stuff. All right, coming right back. More of Midday Mobile at FM Talk 106.5. Answer some of these texts and get to the phones, too, at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135, FM Talk 106.5, and thank you. Now, even though we've got a Cub Scouts thing happening tonight, I have a bunch of readings stacked up on the U.S. Department of the Interior, Indian Affairs, and Feed of Trust Lands and all that. So, good, great. I got to have more research I got to do tonight, but I'd like to learn new things, so I'm going to do that.
How long has it been since you got to say, even though I have the Cub Scouts event tonight?
This is the first time in a while, right? That's right. I'm pretty fired up. So awesome. It's a good thing. Yeah, scouting. I've got my beef with BSA, but still the best show going. All right, couple items here that news that has been breaking today. But I do want to add this too. I need to make sure as I kind of try to work better to understand this story about the former sergeant with the police department. I was talking about how this would work, that they were, a friend of mine that knows law enforcement here said that they were warnings. And then somebody said, okay, well, maybe, you know, then you, if the officer doesn't, I think Damon was saying, you know, if the officer doesn't go to court or something. So this person says, that's not how it works. You go to initial appearance for a ticket and then plead guilty or not guilty. If you plead not guilty, then the officer goes to the second appearance. And that's when you would have the officer there or not.
I guess that makes sense.
It's taken me a while. I think it's taken most people. And the way the story's been reported, I'm not saying that there's any malfeasance, but there's a lot of things that just we're not in the know of, mm-hmm. right, on how all this system works. So I'm trying to figure out, like, either were people actually being pulled over and given the warning and that was going in on the record, or was the allegation here that they were looking through a database and going, Dalton Orwig just ran a red light. You had no idea. You're doing whatever. And you're being...
not fair.
So and, we're... Yeah, not fair.
You know, and separate from this story, I mean, it's brought up so much
like
discussion.
Crime, yeah.
It reminds you how much, good and bad, but it reminds you how much police officers have to do, because you think of a police officer and you think they're out there writing tickets, going to calls, doing, you know, the normal police work that you think of, but how much of their time is spent doing paperwork and then they have
court.
To go to court.
Yes.
It's like three jobs.
Yes, it is. And then they have to have another job on top of that. But that's a whole other show. Mm-hmm. We can talk about that because that is valid for sure. Also, this we're talking about, as we went on the air today, the story about a bicyclist in Baldwin County. What's the story right now?
Yeah, okay. Well, the story now from our news partners at WKRG, and you might have heard a little bit of this on the update, but mm-hmm. this morning, during morning rush hour between 7 and 8 a.m., they reported that the Alabama State Troopers said Highway 98 in Baldwin County shut down between Keller Road and County Road 13 as they investigated an accident. And that was this morning that it was shut down. It's open now. A bicyclist was hit by a vehicle, and even a helicopter was called to the scene. I think they had to life flight this person from Highway 98, and it reopened about an hour after the accident happened, 8:35. It was between a bicyclist and a vehicle. A vehicle hit a bicyclist, and the person was airlifted. No word yet on the bicyclist's condition. They took the bicycle away on a wrecker. That's according to WKRG. But I thought this was really interesting because we monitor the texts during the morning show, get a ton of texts. texts yes. about, and a lot of it is about traffic. But at 7:39 this morning, a texter sent in, a cyclist just about hit my bumper this morning. He ran the stop sign on County Road 1 in the curve to get on 98 North. I had to jam on the brakes because there was another truck in the southbound lane. It's not every biker, but there seem to be more entitled people than not. It's like playing Frogger down here. And then, okay, so that was at 7:39. This report of a cyclist being hit happened at 7:45. That's when WKRG first reported. Now, it wasn't the same location that our texter was, but it was on, both were on Highway 98.
Right.
And
we don't, do we know the scenario of where the when the bicyclist was hit by the vehicle, does it say, were they out in traffic? Was it on the side of the road? Was it, does it say any of that?
The report isn't very specific of how the accident happened. They just, their initial report that it was on Highway 98 between Keller Road and County Road 13. And it was in Highway 98 because they actually had to shut Highway 98 down. But there's no report on whether the bicyclist was out in the road or
whether... This is what I'm just trying to, and I'm just trying to understand, you know, the scenario, because we have the description here that what was going on nearby, you know, or not nearby, but in the same area with another bicyclist.
Mm.
Then was this what, you know... I'd be interested to hear kind of like what the scenario, because we have the description from our texter here, what happened there, of running a stop sign, which, by the way, I mean, this goes back to this discussion. We've been having the bicycle on the road discussion since the launch of this station in 2009.
Yeah.
Okay. It's been going on. And the give 3 feet and all those things. But at the same time, it's incumbent upon the people on a bicycle, if you're going to be on the road, and you have all the right to the road as the vehicle, you have got to follow the same rules.
Yeah.
And that means stop signs. That means stop lights. Those things apply to you, too.
Yeah, they do. And I went over to WKRG's Facebook page because I kind of wanted to see the discussion going on about this story to see if other people were having the same issues that some of our texters are trying to, when they're trying to get to work in the morning or leave work at night and the cyclists are in the road.
Right.
And it seems like there are a lot of people that were reporting that they've had issues. And so one person, which this is a comment that I've heard a lot throughout my life, just because it's legal doesn't make it smart. And just because it's legal
Agreed.
To be on the bike, you have to abide. You have to keep yourself alive, first off, and you have to keep other people out of danger. But there's a big argument going on in this WKRG comment section where some people are saying that it's the driver's fault, that so often drivers are texting or not paying attention, and they are the true dangers on the road and not the bicyclists. But there are a ton of people commenting on this. And then there's even some people that ride their bicycles in that area. This one person said, after being threatened by local rednecks, they say, at 6 a.m. on a Sunday morning, my kids and I stopped biking. Far too many accidents are not actually accidents. So they're implying here that people go out of their way to try to hit bicyclists that are in the road.
I would imagine, really? Now, is there some kind of homicidal personality or something out there? Sure, but if I don't think even if people are... I imagine people holler at them and do all those things, but somebody that would intentionally strike a bicycle, if they're moving at any speed with a vehicle, they would have no sense.
Right.
Because they could kill the person, hurt them. But, and by the way, too, get another text of those locations between what we were reporting from our text line this morning and where that accident happened are very close. A friend of mine that, you know, lives in that neighborhood, so he knows, and he just told me, yeah, those are very close together, Sean. I really want to wait to find out the details of this scenario with the injury there, because here's the problem: when people get mad at bicyclists in general, you're stereotyping. Now, are there individual bicyclists? Man, I hear the stories. I see some of it here, but it's nothing like I hear from my friends in Baldwin County. I hear very specific stories of people that are making big mistakes, although I see the not recognizing the red light stop sign stuff all the time here.
Mm-hmm.
But I hear a lot more coming from Baldwin County. But that doesn't mean everybody... It's the problem with stereotyping. You say, well, this one person did it, so everybody on a bicycle does it that way. That's not fair.
Right.
And, you know, if somebody, you know, ran you off the side of the road and they were driving a Toyota pickup truck, like I am, right, then you're saying everybody who drives a Toyota pickup truck is going to run you off the road. I mean, it just didn't make sense. First of all, it's shallow-minded. Second of all, it's not an efficient way to live your life. But there are obviously individual cases of drivers not paying attention. We've had those stories, and there's individual cases of bicyclists not paying attention, not following the rules of the road.
And when those two are combined, then that's when you have a really dangerous situation. And anyone who knows someone who maybe not a professional biker, but somebody who goes out and does it often, you know, has...
Yeah, I got a friend who does that.
And each of them, every single one, every single bicyclist that goes out and gets on the road, they have stories of either rude people throwing things from their vehicle at them or yelling at them. But like you said, grouping all of them in one group and saying all bicyclists are bad, the ones that have been doing it for a long time generally seem to know the rules of the road and are able to stay out of danger. But then you have, if somebody wants to get into bicycling and they go out and buy a nice expensive bike and they plan on being out there in the road, it takes a while, or it takes them time to learn the rules of the road, or some of them don't even care. So it's just like everything. There's a lot of nuance involved, and you have to really pay attention.
Well, and here's the question too: are we running out of the road bikes here? And I see a text from people talking about the Tour de Fairhope, and that went on, and videos of people running stop signs. I don't know if you're going to have some kind of tour race or something like that, then you would shut down roadways.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a situation here where you have what was a pretty rural county 20 years ago, and maybe there were good areas to ride bicycles 20 years ago in Baldwin County, maybe they're not that anymore with the traffic. And just saying, and I agree, you know, people say, well, they should have to buy a tag or whatever. Well, they don't right now, okay? And they have the right to use the roadway.
Right.
But just because, like you said, just because you have the right to use the roadway doesn't mean it's the best idea. Or maybe you have to gauge when you ride versus when you don't ride. Although we've had tragic stories, people riding on weekends and getting run over. I lamented here in Mobile is the bicycles to some degree, but more just the people who walk randomly in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that every morning. I'm coming in and I get a mix of exercise people. Although I'll say this, there's some people that I see the same bunch of people every morning. They are lit up like they're at a rave, some kind of rave disco thing. I mean, they've got green lights and blue lights and red lights all over them. They look like Mr. Roboto walking down. They're well lit, but some of them aren't. And they're out exercising. And then often I'm coming down Airport Boulevard, and it's a series of people that are not exercising. They're imitating Frogger crossing back and forth across Airport Boulevard with no recognition of the fact that, you know, there's cars hurtling down the road.
And I always wonder if they're going to work or going home. The people I see in the morning that that are just walking, it seems, without, you know, anything in mind. But this story from this morning that happened over in Fairhope, we're waiting on word for the condition of the bicyclist that was airlifted to the hospital, but they did shut down Highway 98 for a portion of the morning after that wreck.
All right, Dalton, thanks for the update on that. We'll get some phone calls here at 343-0106, 343-0106. You know, people asking about bike lanes and places where they have bike lanes. Even when there's a bike lane, the way I understand it, they still have the right to ride on the road. For me, and I'm somebody that, you know, would ride, I choose to walk. I do a lot of walking. I walk on the sidewalk, bike lane deals, instead of the road, because that's where I'm supposed to walk. But I also talk to people that are serious bikers, and they have problems with riding their bikes on the sidewalks, too, so they want to ride in the road. Either way, how about we do at least discuss this, where we try to minimize the amount of people getting hurt on the roadway doing this. All right, get to the phones next. 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 150 FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile. Paul Feinbaum on the way in a few. By the way, Mark Holliday and I were talking the whole. First of all, Mark is playing Frogger back in the back. I just mentioned Frogger, and he found an online version of Frogger, which means maybe at 2:05, Mark, make some room. I'll be back there to play some Frogger with you. And also mentioning about bicyclists riding against traffic. Maybe I was the only one that was lectured to about this growing up. You walk against traffic. You ride bicycles with traffic. Okay, and I can't tell you the number of people that I see walking with traffic. And like I said, I'm one of those walkers out there, but headphones in and walking with traffic. Y'all got way too much faith in other people if you do that. And you really, really do. Let's go to Jay in Mobile first. Hey, Jay.
Hi. I'd like to thank you for taking the call. And I do agree with you, Sean. Something needs to be done. A big problem that we have, in my opinion, is the gentleman was talking about people throwing stuff. Yes, people that are, I wouldn't say they're rude, I say they're criminal. When you act that way, you cross the line from being rude. Rude, in my opinion, would be being legally impolite. When you throw stuff at first, people, you're a criminal. And we don't need those people.
Yeah, that's probably, I don't know what the definition of, is that assault or something? I'm sure there's a definition of it. I don't know what it is, but.
It's fine. It doesn't really matter. But I think that we might want to consider doing something that's separate but equal for bicyclists, because I think that we probably, there's enough of them that we could use a bike lane in certain areas that we know we're potentially going to have a problem. A problem that we do have with bicycles, and we do have it. And I'm generally against people bicycling for pleasure. If somebody's working or a kid, yes, I think they should be riding a bike. But there are people who will ride the bike and thump their nose at you that I'm on my bike and you have to respect me, and I can ride right down the middle of the road and you have to do this, and I'm going to go 20 miles an hour, and I know the speed limit's 50 miles an hour.
Right.
And what happens when you do that is, sooner or later, you run into somebody that's having a bad day or has an attitude themselves. We have to work together as people. I think there is a time and place for a bike. However, I own a bike, and I use common sense. Sometimes I try to ride it down the road. Usually, I prefer to ride on the sidewalk. But we have a certain segment of our population who has gone too far, who is looking for trouble, not only driving, but also riding a bike. And we need to get these people either back in line or off the road, or more importantly, separate them. When I was using the term separate but equal, that may be a good solution for certain roads like Highway 98 where people want to travel with. Just build a separate bike lane and say, if you're on a bike, you need to use it. And we don't have time or energy for people to say, I can do what I want to do and I'm going to do this. And if you like it, good. And if you don't like it, that's good too. Because what happens is this. Sooner or later, that person is going to get hit on their bicycle. And then that road is going to sit down for probably 4 or 5 hours, and we're all going to wait. And one thing I need to say, police officers are really, really, really good at filing reports and taking pictures and taking measurements. But they're really, really, really bad at putting bicyclists back together again, kind of like Humpty Dumpty.
There you go, Jay. Appreciate your call. I would ask, though, you know, the first question I would have would be, okay, you're going to do bike lanes, then I'm not even asking this as me. I just know where the question goes. Somebody will say, well, who's going to pay for that? Is that to come out of specific funds for general, or is it specifically some kind of tax for the bicyclist or something like that? Let's go to KC in Fairhope next. Hey, KC.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, man. It says you are a cyclist, so I'd love to get your perspective on this.
Yeah, I'm a 62-year-old guy that has 7 stents in his heart, started riding about 9 years ago. I now ride about 7 or 8,000 miles a year.
What?
That's right.
Awesome.
I ride across the U.S. in what is called the RET ride across America. My stepdaughter has RET syndrome, and I've ridden across the U.S. before, and I'm doing it this coming October. I'm on the road a lot. Every day, 5 a.m., I leave the house, and I ride the same roads where this accident took place this morning.
Talk to me about that. First, I mean, I have a million questions about your ride across the country. And first of all, before we run out of time on this, remind folks you're doing something like that and helping out. Let's tell folks how they can help with that charity.
It's called RET, R-E-T-T, rideacrossamerica.com. That's the website, RETrideacrossamerica.com.
Okay, because I want to get that up. We're going to save that because that's really cool. Okay, so you drive that you ride that section where the accident happened. Tell me about it. What's a morning on that road like, and what have you seen?
Well, believe it or not, it's I leave at 5 a.m. because it's dark and there's less traffic, number one. Number two, with proper lighting, you're easier to see when you're on the road. And number three, it's easier to see the traffic, both coming oncoming and coming up behind you. If you have a mirror, you can see them easier, because at dusk or at dawn, if they don't have their headlights on, you don't see them until they're right on you if you're a cyclist. you were talking about whether you ride with the traffic or with
right.
or against the traffic. You know, if you're riding against the traffic, you don't even have an instant to react to somebody that's not paying attention. If you're riding with the traffic, at least you have a couple seconds to be able to get out of the way.
It's okay, and so I mean that, and that's what I've all, you know, I was taught early. I teach my children to walk against traffic, but to ride with traffic. I tell them not to ride in traffic at all, but I mean, if they would, they would go with the flow, right? I mean, if they're a vehicle that has use of the roadway, then they would go the way you're supposed to go in that lane.
Absolutely, and let me tell you, even in Fairhope, where there's not as much traffic as there is in Mobile, the distracted driving is a rampant problem. You see it every day. People running off the road, or if you're in an intersection now, people that are sitting there on Facebook or checking their email, the light turns green and they're still sitting there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
People are doing too much on their phones while they're driving and while they're in traffic, and there are cars and other vehicles all over everywhere.
Hey, KC, but what does that say to you? I mean, with that being said, you see it out there. Do you ever, even though you have the legal right to be on that roadway, do you see enough of that and one day you go, you know, this is not a good idea. I'm going to have to find somewhere else to ride. I'm going to have to ride a stationary bike to keep myself in shape to go do these rides for charity. I mean, do you ever just say, I may be in the right, but you also may be on a stretcher.
I mean, listen, I'm the guy that got hit last year by a Mountain Dew bottle on the guy that was traveling 55 miles an hour down Highway 13, only a mile away from where this accident was this morning. I'm with you. I get it, but I'm riding a bicycle. I mean, I get 7 stents in my heart. I mean, I literally believe it keeps me alive. I've lost 45 pounds. I mean, it keeps me in excellent shape.
Hey, if you're riding a bike, listen, I'm in awe right now. You're riding a bicycle across the country. I'm way impressed, Casey. I'm way impressed. So I'm with you there. I just want to make sure if you're doing these things, that you're, you know, I mean, I know you have to get the practice and the exercise to be able to do these things, but the more hours you're on that road, if this is a thing, the just statistically, probably better chance of something happening to you.
So what we do is we do everything we can to keep that from happening. Number one, we try to ride safely, as you say. And the more experienced cyclists do take more precautions. We put lights on our bike, both front and back, blinking lights. We try to even pay more money for more expensive lights that have higher lumens so that they're brighter. We wear clothes to make us more visible. I mean, we're all going to go sometime, but you know, I don't think we're taking unnecessary risk by riding on a road bike near traffic. Granted, we're still taking precautions.
There we go. Casey, I hate it. I'm up against the break, and we go straight into the Paul Feinbaum show here. But I welcome you. Call back anytime. And please send us an email with information on that charity. I'd like to keep up with you as you ride across the country. Isn't that cool? Good stuff. 158 FM Talk 106.5. Be back tomorrow morning, bright and early, for Mobile Mornings. And this show, Midday Mobile, on the road tomorrow, heading to Dauphin Island to get a big Labor Day weekend kickoff. We'll be down there with the mayor and a whole bunch of other people. So, hey, Island folks, come see me tomorrow.